The reading of God's Word.
Our scripture reading comes from Habakkuk chapter 3, verses 1 through 16. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to the Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard the report of you and your work. O Lord, do I fear. In the midst of the years, revive it. In the midst of years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. Before him went pestilence, and plague followed at his heels. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations. Then the eternal mountains were scattered. The everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, and the curtains in the land of Midian did tremble. Was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers, or your indignation against the sea? When you rode on your horses, on your chariot of salvation, you stripped the sheath from your bow, calling for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. The raging waters swept on. The deep gave forth its voice. It lifted its hands on high. The sun and the moon stood still in their place at the light of your arrows as they sped, at the flash of your glittering spear. You marched through the earth in fury, you threshed the nations in anger. You went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck. You pierced his own arrows, the heads of his warriors, who came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret. You trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. I hear, and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. This is the word of the Lord.
Awesome. 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 So it was a few months ago. I was feeling very brave. And I went to Jared and I said, Jared, I preached in June. I feel like I can do it again. He said, sure. And I was thinking, he's going to hand me one of the nine marks or something like that, something I can understand. Then I thought, well, maybe he'll, give me something closer to Christmas because kids passed their Christmas. That all makes sense, right? He said, I got Habakkuk 3 open. And I was a little bit worried about that. So, and then further along, as we got closer and closer and closer, I'm not one to really pay much attention to politics, but then I realized that he'd give me the sermon the week after Election Day, so thanks, which is never an easy thing to do, to talk about what happens on Election Day. So that being said, how was everybody's week? Everybody have a hopeful week this week? Were you like me that by Sunday afternoon you had forgotten to remember that the righteous live by faith, that your faith had dwindled? As for me, it's as soon as I get to lunch and my faith is gone because I pull up my phone, my fantasy football team, I have no hope in. And they're never going to win, but they did win last week. But as we get through the week and as we got to Tuesday and we started looking at, what was going to face our country, were you like me feeling like I don't have any hope? I don't know, maybe you were. Maybe after Tuesday you felt a little bit more hopeful, maybe not, but I certainly did not. But we do see a difference, though. When we've talked about Habakkuk, we've seen Habakkuk have conversations with God, but almost like an argumentative spirit, almost like saying, how long, God? What's going on here? When are you going to take care of this? And you see them going back and forth. You see Habakkuk talk, and you see God answer, and you see Habakkuk say, that's not what I was talking about. I don't like that plan. You see God's response in chapter 2. And then we get down to chapter 2, verse 20. It says, but the Lord is in his holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before him. And so I originally just kind of overlooked that verse, but I kept reading back and thinking, what we're about to experience with Habakkuk is a completely different Habakkuk than we've had in the first two chapters, but why? So I went back to verse 20. I read through chapter 2 again, but I went back to verse 20 and I saw that, to me, this is what God is saying. He's saying, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Let me say that again. The Lord is in his holy temple, holy, set apart. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And what I think that Habakkuk experienced was the realization, something he already knew, but the realization that, you know, what we learn in Romans chapter, you know, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Excuse me, fall short of the glory of God. And so I think that Habakkuk probably saw that, and he probably realized that he's no different than the people that are going to come take them away into captivity. His sin is just as great. The people's sin is just as great as what as the people that were just about to take them over. So we that leads us to chapter 3. Chapter 3 is an interesting chapter because there's a lot of figurative language, but there's also like a majority of it is Habakkuk looking back in the past. And so you'll see that. You'll see, and I will talk about that. You'll see Habakkuk looking back in the past. But you'll also see kind of Habakkuk also having visions or looking to the future, things that are going to happen soon, things he knows God is going to do based on what he has done in the past. And so as we go through it, some of it may seem confusing or some of it may be like, what does that mean? We're going to go verse by verse and kind of talk through what each of those mean, because a lot of this has to do with Habakkuk looking back and seeing where God has been faithful and basing his faith on that and basing his faith on the fact that God, throughout history, all the way back to creation and the Exodus and getting them into the promised land, he has seen God be faithful. He has seen God take care of their enemies. So we will see that as we get going. But starting in verse 1, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet, according to the Shigionoth. I have I've done a lot of study. I've studied a lot about this chapter. And I got to tell you, Shigionoth is not a word that I have really any idea what it is. It's only mentioned one more time in the Old Testament, and it's even in a different form. But when we were sitting down with our teaching team, we kind of thought through and kind of looked at some comparisons, things like that. But it's probably a word that has to do with how this is sung. Because what we have here is a prayer from Habakkuk, but also it is meant to be sung as a praise, a song of praise. And so Shigionoth could either refer to something that is meant to be sung with passion or excitement, energy. It could refer to an instrument or something like that that's just supposed to be focused on. We in the teaching team just kind of make up nicknames and stuff. So we refer to it as the Shiggy, or as Bob calls it, getting Shiggy with it. So he tries to be funny all the time. But that is our heading. That's our title for what's going to happen. So we see in verse 2 Habakkuk prays. He pleads with God. He says, "O Lord, I've heard the report of you, and your work do I fear." And Habakkuk is saying, "I've heard the report of you. I know the past. I know what you've done in the past to take care of our enemies. I know what we've just talked about." And he's referring to chapter 2. I said, "I know what I've heard about you, what I've heard about what you can do, God. And it makes me tremble." It says, "Do I fear?" The NIV says, it says, "I've heard about your fame, and it makes me stand in awe." So we have Habakkuk starting off in fear of what God is going to do, but with almost a hopeful fear. Like he knows what God can do. He knows that God can take care of their enemies. He knows what God is capable of, and yet it causes him to fear. But yet we see that Habakkuk is basically saying, no. In the next line, saying, "But your will be done, God. I want your will to be done. I want to make sure that that I'm saying that. That I want your will to be done. As hard as it may be for us, I want it to be done." So Habakkuk says, "In the midst of the years, revive it." He's saying, "The reputation that I've heard, the things that I've heard about you, God, the things I've grown up learning, I want you to bring it to our time, bring it to our day, bring it to what we're going through, bring it to what's about to happen to us. We want that to happen." So he kind of repeats himself. He says, "In the midst of the years, make it known." He's pleading to God, saying, "God, make yourself known in our time. I know what you've done in the past and how you've been faithful in the past, and I know how you've dealt with enemies in the past. And we will see that. But bring it to our time. Make it known so that they can see who you are." And last but not least, in the second verse, though, we see Habakkuk say probably the most important line, at least in these first 15 verses, where he finishes and says, "But in wrath, remember mercy." So even God, even though we know we're going into captivity, we know we're going to be punished, We know that it's going to be a long, painful process. But in the midst of that, God, remember mercy. Remember who you are. You're not only a God of wrath, a God that must deal with evil, but you're also, Habakkuk appeals to God and who he is and says, I know who you are, and you're a God of mercy too. So, God, in the middle of your wrath, show us mercy. So we see what, in verse 3, is the beginning of where Habakkuk begins to describe God as a warrior, God as somebody who's coming to rescue them, coming to save them. And we'll see God. We'll see that the beginning of verse 3, it says, God came from Teman and the Holy One from Mount Paran. And the two different, it's basically saying the same thing in two different lines in two different places. And so how they're referring to God has to do with how the patriarchs like Abraham and Isaac, how they reference God. And then we read the Holy One. It's how in the book of Isaiah, over 30 times, Isaiah mentions God as the Holy One. And Teman and Mount Paran, coming from the same region of the south. And right after that, after Mount Paran, you see the word Selah, which also, it's also a musical term, but for the most part, we understand it as meaning something like, this is a place that you stop, you pause, you reflect on what you just read. And so what we just read is a plea for mercy, but God is ready and he's coming. And so Habakkuk sees that and he sees kind of a vision. He says, God is coming from the south and he's coming to take care of his enemies. And so just a time to reflect on that, who God is and what he's about to do. And the amazing thing is like God is coming, like he's coming to rescue his people. So when we get down where it says his splendor covered the heavens, when we think about splendor, we think about something royal, something king-like, something that is amazing in that way, something that just represents, that covers the entire earth. The earth was full of his praise. It's praise that praise from the people, praise for what he has earned as being the Holy One, the God of Israel. Verse 4 says, his brightness was like a light. And when it talks about being a light, his brightness was like a light. This is referring to a light like you would experience when it's first the beginning of dawn, the sun is just coming up, and it's bright, kind of like the lights that are on my shiny head right now. But the light, like just really, really blinding light. And like for me, like every day, it happens to me every day when I go out of my driveway and I go up the road, and like the sun just kind of jumps out in front of the trees there, and you're like, and I have to like kind of pull over, put the sunglasses on, put the visor down. But yeah, it's that kind of bright light that God shows. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand. So that's referring to rays flashing from his hand, which would be symbolic for lightning. And there he veiled his power. So Habakkuk is seeing God being bright as the light, lightning flashing from his hand, but holding his hand closed because his power is veiled, not letting his hand go. But almost as if he's ready. So we're seeing God as a warrior, someone who's approaching his enemies, ready to take them down. And we see that God is holding he's holding his weapons. He's ready. So we see that this is showing us that God is ready. Now, verse 5 sounds very familiar, and it should to all these kids that are in here and this group right here, definitely. Verse 5 says, before him went pestilence, which means like a sickness or a fever, and plague followed at his heels. Now, when we think about plagues, what do you guys typically think about? Cole's got it. I know Cole knows the answer. When we think about plagues, we think about the Exodus. We think about the time in Egypt where God sent the plagues to deal with Pharaoh and the people of Egypt in order to let the people go. And we see that God's royal entourage, basically of pestilence and plague and things that, you know, that he has at his disposal, we see that throughout. We see that when God dealt with them in Egypt, but we also see all the way throughout the Pentateuch and throughout the Old Testament that God used that to deal with his enemies over time. And so we see that God is coming. He continues to come, but he has at his disposal sickness and fever and plague and everything that he needs to destroy his enemies. And we get to verse 6, and it's almost like God arrives. God arrives. It says, he stood and he measured the earth. So basically, God is arriving at this point. He stands, he measures the earth, he looks, and he shook them, and the nation shook. But what that means is basically the symbolic, the language here is God stopping and looking at his enemies. And his enemies being so scared of just the look from God that they disperse, that they scatter. Almost like if you're in the yard and you kind of get near a squirrel and that squirrel just freezes. and it's scared, but then it'll take off, you know, going 20 different ways. And like I have a dog at home that does the same thing. Like if I look at him, like he will just take off, like he's gone, because he knows he's going to get it. Because I you know, that's he's a Yorkie, and that's what they do. So, but that's almost the sense of, like, God is facing down his enemies, and just by the sight of God, just by God looking at him, enemies disperse. So we continue to see that Habakkuk is looking at this language as possibly in the future, but he's also looking back to the past. He's also reminding himself the things that God has done in the past, that where he has been faithful, where he has shown that he is faithful. And Habakkuk will continue to reference this on and on and on. Let's see. So he stood there, he shook the nations, then the internal mountains were scattered. And that's to give you a picture of the mountains being the most permanent and eternal thing on earth, being at God's disposal, meaning that there's nothing on earth, even as permanent as a mountain, that can overpower God. God is sovereign over even creation. So the eternal mountains were scattered. And can you imagine something like a stone mountain just scattering, just falling apart? It says, the everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. What that's saying is God is eternal. God is the one that is everlasting. Everything else that we experience or pay attention to or put our mind on is temporal. Even the mountains, even something as stable and as solid as a mountain, cowers at God's control. And cowers because of God's sovereignty. All right, so verse 7 should be another familiar verse in the history of Israel. It says, I saw the tents of Kishon in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Now, Kishon was the Cushion, or however you want to say it. Kishon was one of the first places, the first countries that when the Israelites made it into the Promised Land, one of the first countries that tried to overtake Israel, tried to drag them into slavery and into oppression, and tried to draw them out of the land, take them in captivity. And we see that in the book of Judges chapter 2, that as they were trying to oppress Israel, or as they were oppressing Israel, the people saw their sin, they saw that they were falling away from God, that they were getting away from God, and so they pleaded to God for help, and God sent Othniel, the judge, to deal with them, to deal with the people, and so they dealt with the armies of Kishon. Also, we look in chapter 6 of the book of Judges, same thing. The people need God. They need God to forgive them. They know they've sinned. They've turned away from God, but they plead to God for help. And my favorite judge for obvious reasons, we see that Gideon goes, and God uses Gideon to disperse the Midianites, to take care of the Midianites, to destroy the Midianites. So again, you see Habakkuk going back in time, going back in his mind, going, God, I remember that story about Midian and Gideon. I remember you being faithful during those times. I remember you taking care of that for us when we seek you, when we yearn after you, God. I know that you have taken care of those things, and I remember you being faithful. So we switch basically from, the conversation switches from like a third person to a second person. And I didn't have any teachers tell me that was wrong, so I think that's right. So we switch, in verse 8, we switch to a second person where Habakkuk again addresses God, and he says, was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers? Or your indignation against the sea? When you rode on your horses on your chariot of salvation? Now Habakkuk is asking a question, but if you think through what God has used in the past to make sure that his plan is fulfilled, to make sure his people have been rescued and redeemed, and make sure that he takes care of his people, if you think about it in the past, you know that during the Exodus time, while the children of Israel were in Egypt, what was one of the plagues? He turned the Nile River into blood. That's right. So this is referring to that, saying, were you angry with that river? Were you angry with them because you turned it into blood? And when they were escaping and Pharaoh's army was bearing down on them, God used what else to get them across? What else did he? Well, he parted. Red Sea, that's right. This group's doing good. All right. So, on and on and on again, and as the Israelites are going into the Promised Land, you can see also, too, they cross the Jordan River in several different times. So Habakkuk, again, is referencing things from his mind and saying, God, was your wrath and your anger against those things? And he kind of answers his own question. He said, when you rode on your horses on your chariot of salvation? Well, no, because that was God's purpose. That even God would use his own creation to fulfill what his purpose is for his people, to redeem his people. God would use his own creation. He would use whatever he needs to make that happen. So verse 9 says, you stripped the sheath from your bow, calling for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. And what that's referring to is you strip the sheath of your bow. God is getting ready for battle again. He's calling for many arrows. So at his command, he has whatever he needs to begin battle. And what he is mostly talking about there, the word for arrows there is the same word that's used when we talk about lightning again. So God is using lightning, he's using arrows. And then it says you split the earth with rivers, meaning that floods are happening all of this time. So Habakkuk is referencing floods. So you get to verse 10. It says, the mountains saw you and writhed. The raging waters swept on. So you see from verse 9, floods are coming. The waters swept on. The deep gave forth its voice. It lifted its hands on high. And that's yet another reference to Habakkuk saying, God, you have used bodies of water so many times to rescue us, to help us, to get us to safety. And we see that, again, Habakkuk is referencing the past. So again, you see a Habakkuk whose faith is growing in the midst of this chapter. It's a totally different Habakkuk than you've seen in chapter 2. The Habakkuk of chapter 3 has all of his faith in what God has done for them in the past. And so for his faith to be strong, for his faith to have foundation, he begins to go back into the past and remember the things that God has done for them. And remember the things where God has always been faithful. All right, so we get to verse 11. And verse 11 is Habakkuk's reference to Joshua chapter 10, where during battle, the sun, the moon stood still. The sun stood still in its place. The daylight was longer. It talks more about the battle. It talks more about the flash of your glittering spear. Again, a reference probably to something like lightning or something that is a natural thing, a natural disaster or something like that God uses, maybe a thunderstorm or something like that God uses against his enemies. You march through the earth in fury. You thresh the nations with anger. Now, I had to be honest with you, I'd heard the word threshed before, but I had no idea really what it meant. I've heard it before, and that's, you know, you kind of hear things and kind of go, what exactly does that mean? So I did what every smart person would do. I Googled it. I looked it up. I watched YouTube videos on it, and it looked really boring. But it has to do with separating the wheat from the good part and the bad part and stuff like that. And so I looked at that and I saw that. But mostly what you get is a separation. What you get is a trampling. When you see that God marched through the earth in fury, you thresh the nations in anger. Meaning that God's anger, God's determination to rescue his people, it didn't matter what stood in his way. They were all in the path of God's wrath, and God was going to walk through or do whatever he needed to in order to redeem his people. So again, Habakkuk goes back in his mind and he starts to think about how those ways have happened throughout time. So we get to verse 13, and it's kind of a summation of everything that we've talked about before from verse 3 on down, from verse 3 to verse 13. It says, you went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck. And I made reference in there this verse. I said, this is the type of verse that if I was reading this to the kids, the boys would go, sweet! And the girls would be like, ugh. But what this is talking about is God is, he went out for the salvation of the people. This is what his whole purpose was. This is what his whole purpose was, for the salvation of of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. Now, when we read your anointed, it could very well mean the same thing from the line above it. It can mean your anointed, meaning the people of Israel, being their anointed people, being the ones that are in the covenant relationship with God, the ones that God will always take care of and love and seek out. But it also could refer to the salvation of your anointed, meaning Christ. It could be a reference to a coming Messiah, that God will do whatever it takes to protect those people, to make sure that in the future, that Messiah is there. So it also, it says, you crush the head of the house of the wicked. It's talking in general about just different leaders that they have dealt with in the past, different heads of countries. Most notable, obviously, would be Pharaoh. and what God did with Pharaoh and taking him down and that being the end of his reign. But as we, you know, as you read through the Pentateuch and as you read as they get through the Promised Land and things like that, you read of different leaders and different powers that God has taken out and just destroyed based on the redemption and the salvation of his people. And we get to a very graphic, in fact, a very graphic description of laying him bare from thigh to neck, meaning that when God takes care of a leader, he doesn't just kind of take care of them or just kind of end them. He annihilates them. He destroys them, never to be heard from again. So that's what that's referring to. Verse 14 says, "You pierced with his own arrows the heads of his warriors. Who came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret?" Verse 14 is Habakkuk is basically saying God is so powerful that he's using the enemy's own weapons against them. Meaning like whatever the enemy is saying that they're strong at, whatever weapon is the weapon of choice or whatever they're good at. As we learned in chapter 2, some of them were puffed up with pride. Whatever the weapon was, God was using it against them. Basically saying, that God is going to use their own weapon against them. It's almost like a humiliating way to be destroyed, but God is basically going to use their weapon against them. And we see that throughout the Old Testament, even before and after Habakkuk. For instance, Daniel in the lion's den, when Daniel was in the lion's den and he came out, and what happened to the people that accused Daniel? Into the lion's den. And we learn from the story of Esther what happened to Haman. He was hung with the very noose that he wanted to use. So that's a reference to those kind of stories of the way that God works and the way that God operates in saying that God will use even their own strongest weapons against them. Verse 15 is kind of our ending to the first 15 verses where it says, "You trample the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters." And what that is a cry for victory, meaning it's over. It's a cry for victory. God, you have taken care of us. And one reference you can write down that'll kind of help describe it a little bit more would be Exodus 15, verses 1 to pretty much the whole chapter. But Exodus 15 is when the Israelites come out of Egypt and they cross the Red Sea and God has taken care of them. And Moses begins to pen a song of praise to God. And he begins to pen it, write it down, and it becomes a song of praise. And this goes back to, a lot of these words resemble what Moses wrote down, saying, "God, you are an amazing God. You have taken care of us. You have saved us from Pharaoh." And basically praising God for all that he has done. What do you do when you're worried about the future? Habakkuk figured it out. Habakkuk's prayers went from me-focused, Israel-focused, focused about the Chaldeans to God-focused. You see a complete difference in how chapters 1 and 2 go and how Habakkuk looked at God and approached God with humility. And Habakkuk is saying, when you are worried about the future, as he is, I mean, and you still see it in verse 16, you see it, a summation is basically Habakkuk is sick to his stomach. He's still worried. He's still scared. Yet he will wait for the day of trouble to come upon us who invade us. Habakkuk is saying, I'm still scared about the future. I'm still worried about what's going to happen, what's coming soon. But what he did, though, is he went back into history everywhere that he could remember that God had been faithful to him and to the people. He said, "God, that's what I'm going to rest on. I'm going to remember how you've been faithful to us in the past. I'm going to remember how you've always taken care of us and how you've always brought us to where we need to be." And so Habakkuk did that. He approached God with humility in prayer, and as he was praying, he remembered what God had done for them. But for us, if we're scared about the future, I mean, I don't care how Tuesday went, I'm still worried about the future. I'm not any more settled. Just like anybody else, I mean, you wake up every day and there's different worries, there's different things that you worry about in the future. So what do we do? What do we do? What do we look to? Obviously, we have the Word of God, but if you go back into verse number 2, that last line where it says, "In wrath, remember mercy." And I know that when I get scared about the future, I know where I like to put my faith, and that's the cross. And I know that God used that wrath, that plea that Habakkuk had about God, "In your wrath, remember mercy." How great it is to see that God answered that prayer through Jesus. God answered that prayer by sending Jesus, by taking his wrath, our punishment, and putting that on his son. So I know that when the future doesn't look bright, when it's scary, when I'm unsure about what's going to happen, I can look back just like Habakkuk did to how God has been faithful. We can see it in his word, but more than anything, I can look back to Jesus and look back to God and thank him for, even in his wrath, remembering to have mercy on me. Thank you guys for letting me share, and if you guys would pray with me. God, we thank you so much for the story of Habakkuk. We thank you for just what it teaches us about prayer, how to just approach you with humility. We just thank you for what it teaches us about the future, that our faith is not in any worldly power or anything else. Our faith is in how you've been faithful in the past and how we can look to that. So, God, I thank you so much for Jesus. Thank you for sending him to die on the cross. We just thank you so much for your love and your grace for us. When we don't deserve it, you sent Christ to die anyway. So, God, I pray that we remember that this week. We remember that even in your wrath, you remember mercy.